This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertz, and the Trump administration has filed an emergency petition with the Supreme Court seeking to lift due process procedures imposed by a federal judge for immigrants slated for deportation to a third country other than their own. Despite what aid groups, including the Red Cross and the UN, say is chaos in letting an American group be in charge, with the Israeli military, operations getting food to people in Gaza have succeeded, says State Department spokesperson Tammy Bruce.
Because someone might feel left out. Is, I think, the height of hypocrisy. So the bottom line is that clearly people who care about the nature of solving this problem are taking action.
Video of the first food distribution in Rafah today shows thousands of Palestinians rushing and stampeding, with the staff having to evacuate to safety. Major U.S. stock indexes closing hundreds of points higher, the Dow by over 700 points, the NASDAQ over 460 points. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Kuska. There's no estimated reopening date set for the Blackhawk Bridge connecting Wisconsin to Iowa. The Iowa DOT said last week that they confirmed one of the bridge's piers moved, creating a safety issue. The 94-year-old bridge has been closed since May 17th and was also closed for nearly 2 months last year. DOT officials said that people were walking or biking around the barricades over Memorial Day weekend and issued a reminder that it is illegal to cross a closed bridge. A new bridge is under construction and expected to open in 2027. It's bear season, according to the Wisconsin DNR. With more, here's Civic Media's Melissa Kay.
Black bears are actively searching for easy food sources as they come out of hibernation. Stay bear aware and secure your garbage, compost, and pet food indoors. You can either take down bird feeders or hang them up high where the bears can't get to them. Make sure your outdoor grills are clean or store them inside. Don't leave food or coolers in your vehicles and never approach a bear. If you give them space, they will likely move on in their search for an easy meal.
A new package of bills in Wisconsin aims to protect pollinators. With more, here's Civic Media's Joanne Krulatz.
Among the introduced legislation is a proposal to designate June as Pollinator Awareness Month in the state. One would require state agencies and government entities to give preference to native plants. Another would add more regulations for pesticides and insecticides. And one would establish a Protect Pollinators license plate program. The rusty-patched bumblebee would also be named as the state native insect.
After sunshine over Memorial Day weekend, we'll now have some rain through Wednesday in the Cooley region. Scattered showers and cloudy skies tomorrow with total rainfall amounts under a half inch. Temperatures will rise later in the week, reaching the 80s by the weekend. We'll also see the precipitation clear out overnight Wednesday, leading to mostly sunny skies late in the week and through the weekend. We'll have more details in our Civic Media forecast. For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Kuska.
The Boston Red Sox in town. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball tonight, game two of the Brewers and Red Sox. The crew winning yesterday 3-2. Trevor McGill with the save. And lefty D.L. Hall awarded the win after coming off the 60-day IL plagued with injuries. I asked Hall how it felt first game back in front of a sold-out stadium in front of over 40,000 fans.
Oh, great. I mean, I was excited, you know, just to be back out there. Executed the pitches when I need to. Other than the leadoff walk, I thought it was pretty good.
Packers quarterback Jordan Love on hand to throw out the first pitch. Spent about a half hour in the Brewers clubhouse before the game.
It was awesome. Being down in the clubhouse, talking to all the guys, you know, how they get ready for a game. It's definitely a lot different than football environment, but these guys are playing games every day. So it's definitely a whole different world coming out here and seeing the behind-the-scenes action. So I'm very grateful that they were able to welcome me in there and just talk and hang out for a little bit. They all seem like really good guys.
That's Jordan Love with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight and tomorrow, cloudy sky, few showers around at times. Low tonight, low 50s. High tomorrow in the mid-60s. Dries out for the end of the week and the upcoming weekend as the temps climb. Heating up into the 70s Thursday, 80s for Friday and the weekend. Currently at 64 degrees.
Matt Nair on air.
The Joint Finance Committee just had four meetings around the state of Wisconsin. The top three things of concern to people were education, health care, and child care. The Republicans stripped all of those things out of Governor Evers' budget. So I'm thinking about going next time just to make sure that they all put their phones down when I'm talking to them, because I have a feeling they're all playing Candy Crush because they're not paying attention to what people are saying.
Catch Matt Nair on air at its new time, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
We are the keepers of the wild. For more than 80 years, we've been committed to conserving the natural landscapes that define our nation. Nothing is more important than maintaining wild spaces for adventurers to explore and wildlife to thrive. We are America's hunters and target shooters. Together with firearm, ammunition, and archery manufacturers, we've supported the conservation of more than 36 million acres of American wildlands. For more information, visit OutdoorStewards.org.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we'll take another look at changes to SNAP benefits. We'll wrap it all up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. I hope you can join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, LaCrosse's home for the Todd Allball Show.
That is what our framers intended, and I don't care if it's your team winning today, it won't always be that way. So what in the heck are they doing?
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
Are you kidding me?
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I think it speaks to Wisconsinites in a really special way that I've been to 15 baseball stadiums. It ain't the same in other places.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. It is hour two of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And our discussion of something that strikes at the heart of every Wisconsin family's well-being is our focus for the next half hour. I am so happy to be joined by Dahi Wolf, the Senior Early Education Analyst at Kids Forward in Wisconsin. Our topic today is childcare. The harsh realities are this. If you are able to even find a child care center for your child, it is likely to be costing you somewhere in the extraordinary ballpark of just shy of $3,000 a month. I'm not even going to talk about babies. They're more expensive. And with the state now debating the biennial budget, Republicans in the state house are looking to basically cut off the support for child care counts, which were, in essence, government subsidies to help keep child care affordable. You know, if you want people working because work is dignified. My goodness, if you are a single working parent with a child that you need to place into child care, and the bill for that is $2,300 a month, $2,800 a month, or more, how are you going to afford that? It is simply a crippling level of expense. Dahi, am I describing what we've got going on here correctly? I mean, this is a child care crisis in Wisconsin as it stands today. And it's about to get worse if the Joint Finance Committee and GOP response to Governor Evers' budget moves forward and becomes our biennial budget.
You are entirely correct. Child care is in crisis. Child care has been in crisis for a long time, but the crisis is really reaching a cliff coming up at the end of June when the funding runs out that has supported child care providers all over the state to stay in business. This funding started back during the pandemic, and amazingly, Wisconsin had a system in place and was able to get those funds out so quickly and so efficiently that there were research and surveys done that showed that Wisconsin had less childcare closings than almost any other state in the country because of the efficiency and the effectiveness of this program. And we want that program to continue under whatever name. It can no longer be called that because the Joint Finance took that out of the budget. But we know that Wisconsin working families deserve support. We know that childcare providers deserve support. And like you said, how are we going to have a strong economy and families being able to go to work without safe, reliable, affordable childcare?
Folks, that's Daffy Wolf, senior early education analyst at Kids Forward. So what you're telling me is we have had a program that has been extraordinarily effective at least keeping childcare somewhat available and affordable. And instead of investing more into that program to make childcare more affordable and more available, we're staring down the double barrel of it potentially being gutted. I've heard estimates, and tell me if I'm wrong, that in some counties, they may be looking at reductions in childcare centers and open slots, available slots, of upwards of 50, 60, 70%. What's that going to do to a local economy in counties facing that kind of level of closure?
I don't even want to think about it. I mean, that is just horrific. And we have a way to prevent that. We have billions in surplus in our budget right now that could be spent to help Wisconsin families, to fund K-12 education, to fund our childcare system. And instead, we're looking at tax cuts. And I just think that's immoral, to say the least. And it's also backwards thinking. I mean, our state motto is forward. We should be thinking about how we can support every working family, every mother, every father, every childcare provider, every business that wants to keep their employees. I mean, we know from the business community, they've been saying this now for years and years, and it keeps coming closer and closer to like their top priority in terms of, you know, recruitment and being able to, have employees and be able to, work, have their business at full capacity. And it's just, especially in rural areas, but also in urban areas, it's just become a huge barrier to, to employment and keeping our economy strong. We have, I'm going to give you another statistic.
I love them. I'm a nerd.
Yeah. For many, many years, Wisconsin has been one of the top five states in terms of women's participation in the workforce. And of course, because we live in a patriarchal society where women are expected to be the caregivers and the mothers of, and the, taking, they're the ones that have to make sure the kids are safe and sound. In order for those women to participate, most of the time they need to have, like I said, safe, reliable, affordable childcare. And if we don't have that, then we're turning our back on all those folks that, that want to be out in the workforce and are not given a choice.
Folks, again, this is Dahi Wolf, senior early education analyst at Kids Forward. So it is pro-business to support childcare. It is also, as I understand things, Dahi, an incredible ROI. In other words, right, to have a vibrant workforce so employers can get butts into the chairs or on the lines that they need, this is essential. But it's also an element of early childhood education, which I believe you're a wee bit of an expert in, Dahi.
Sure.
Childcare is early childhood education. It helps get kids moving in the right direction. And we know that investments in education return 3, 4, 5-fold for a taxpayer dollar. Tell us more.
Yeah, I mean, I could spend the next hour talking about why it's important to invest in childcare. Not just for the economic gains, but of course for, the quality of life and the abilities that it gives kids to have that really, really strong start. I mean, if you talk about neurological development, you talk about motor skills, you talk about, mental health, all the things that kids need to really start out well and have a contribute to society, start out in those first 5 years. I mean, they're just key, especially those first 3 years. And like you mentioned earlier, that's the most expensive time for kids to be in childcare because, when they're smaller and younger, it takes more adults to take care of them and to make sure that they're, thriving and growing. So the research you mentioned, there was a from the University of Chicago, a famous economist, Heckman, who has studied this for, gosh, now 40, 50 years and seen the long-term effects of these investments in terms of the benefits to society. It's everything from high school graduation to longer lives to more home ownership, tax paying, less involvement with the criminal justice system. I mean, it's just every single box you want to check. My organization, Kids Forward, also does a lot of work in the area of juvenile justice and trying to, you know, make things better in our state. And we've often used the statistic to compare the cost of early childhood education and the cost of incarcerating a youth. And when I first started in this work about 20 years ago, I remember, you know, just the astronomical figure of saying, well, it costs about $10,000 to $12,000 a year for a quality childcare slot. It's about $75,000 to incarcerate a youth. Well, I was just told the other day that that is now up to almost $1 million a year. I think it's $875,000 to incarcerate a youth. And don't we think it's a much better investment to, you know, to help those kids and help those families?
Yeah, it's the business justification, if we can talk about lives in such a callous, right, and purely economic, in purely economic terms. We know if we look at Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake, the lack of success we have, even if you're talking about those juveniles that need and have to interact with the legal system, those models of how we've done it, it's not community-based, it's not education-focused, it does not work, and it is cripplingly expensive for Wisconsin taxpayers, and it's not producing the results that people would want to see. So why, I don't understand the case against the investment in childcare. And folks, you're going to want to stick around because Dahi's going to be with me through the next segment. We got a big event coming up that we're going to tell you about on the other side. But Dahi, I tax breaks to what end and for whom? To me, I struggle with the idea of the tax breaks that are being discussed. I am always for tax breaks for middle class working people. I am always for tax incentives and tax breaks for small businesses. I am not for tax breaks for the wealthiest among us who can already afford to pay for whatever childcare they want. Probably a live-in stinking nanny who, you know, they don't have to have two parents working. I don't understand this. It is not going to help working families to decimate our childcare system in favor of tax cuts that will accrue to the benefit of the very few on the backs of the very many. What's the justification for the cuts?
I don't even want to go there. It just doesn't make any sense. It doesn't. It means we don't care about Wisconsin working families. We don't care about the future. We're only willing to see a very short term and not, like I said, the long term, 40 years, 30, 40, even 10 years down the road, we would see benefits. And also, I want to point out that Wisconsin has been short-sighted in this area for a long, long time. In fact, even under Democratic and Republican administrations, depending on the legislature, of course, too, because it's been divided. But we as a state are actually put the least amount of money from our general revenue into childcare of any state in the whole country. So we basically say,
wait a minute, Dahi, say that again, please, okay. Really clearly and yes. Slowly. Sure. So the folks in the back row can hear you.
So we as a state in our budget and our tax money, the GPR, general purpose revenue, we basically put in the least amount of any of the 50 states into supporting childcare in our state. And that's been true historically for a very long time. We do put the very, very minimum in just to be able to get the federal match so we can draw down those dollars. But we have basically ridden the backs of of our federal subsidies for decades to keep our system afloat. And it was the same, like I said, in the last, since the pandemic with the childcare counts and the rescue money. That money actually ran out 2 years ago, but the governor was able to be very creative and very insistent. And we joke that he looked for, under the couch cushions and found $330 million. And basically he went to every agency head all the state agencies and said, do you have any extra? Because this is my priority. And he made it happen. And we got 2 years extra. And now that 2 years is over.
Child care funding running out in Wisconsin, not in a year, not in 6 months, at the end of June. What are we going to do? How do you get involved? Our conversation continues on the other side with Dahi Wolf, Senior Early Education Analyst at Kids Forward. Find more out more about Kids Forward at kidsforward.org. I'm Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked right here. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
Eagle 1490 AM.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. We are in a rare moment right now in Wisconsin politics. Why, you ask? Well, it's because we are not actively in the middle of a campaign cycle. It's been more than 6 weeks now since any of us have seen a campaign ad. It's been pretty nice, hasn't it? The moment we're in is as close as we're going to get to a political off-season here in Wisconsin. And we need to take advantage of this moment by taking action to improve our democracy. That means taking steps to address money in politics, cleaning up some issues with election administration, and creating a long-term plan for nonpartisan redistricting. In some cases, we can't make these kinds of changes in the middle of a campaign, so we need to be thinking about what we can do now. There's a lot both parties can agree on here, too. So let's make some moves this offseason, Wisconsin. Seize this moment to make a better, stronger, more inclusive democracy.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
Wounded Warrior Project has been there for me since that first day in the hospital. They got me out of the house. They got me connected with other veterans, and they helped me face my PTSD. They support me and my family at every turn. And now I'm helping other warriors realize that they're not alone.
Through our hands-on programs, supportive community, and ongoing advocacy, we help post-9/11 veterans realize what's possible. Learn more at woundedwarriorproject.org/possible.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Hans Breitenmoser, we have people in Congress right now cutting food assistance.
All of it is a disregard for how the economy actually works. When you plant seeds in the ground, you get money close to the ground. That's what makes rural economies work. Urban economies are very similar in that regard. Washington is only as good as its participants, and we've got some real dandies there these days.
That's definitely one way to put it.
Catch Mornings with Pat Kreitlow at its new time, weekdays 6 to 9 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
I was stuck in a state of panic and endless rituals, so I made the call.
Mental health care works when you make the call. Visit mentalhealthcareworks.org. A message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Everybody, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Have you and your family had this discussion? Honey, should we have kids? Well, how much is childcare going to cost? Have you put pen to paper and done the math and been blown away? Do you know that childcare in this state costs more than in-state tuition does at the University of Wisconsin-Madison? I'm going to say that again. For one kid, it costs more to put one child in childcare, in early childcare education, than it does to send your college-age student to the University of Wisconsin-Madison. It doesn't have to be this way. It shouldn't be this way. But after decades of neglect, the MAGA regime in state government is threatening to make it so much very, very worse for working people. It seems to me that their solution is, well, get rich quick, otherwise you're screwed in almost every way, shape, and form when it comes to supporting working families. I've got a great guest with me. His name is Dahi Wolf, Senior Early Education Analyst at Kids Forward. You can find out more about Kids Forward at kidsforward.org. Dahi, we've got a big event coming up if people want to get involved and make their voice heard on this issue. Tell us more about that.
I will. And Maggie, just before I pivot, I just need to say one really important thing that we haven't even gotten to, which is that even though childcare is, like you said, just astronomically expensive, we still have a workforce that is severely underpaid. And the average hourly rate for a childcare provider in Wisconsin is still somewhere around, gosh, $10, $11, $12. You can go work at Quick Trip for, much more. And so it shows, how we prioritize our kids. And childcare is not a system that can operate on its own. It's not economically feasible like running a restaurant or, a business. It is something that in every other industrialized Western country is part, just like healthcare, is part of the system and the infrastructure, because those countries prioritize children and families. I mean, they also have paid parental leave and, lots of other things. But I just want to point that out, that even, solving this problem and keeping these programs afloat, we still have a severe crisis in terms of the workforce and how they're paid. And of course, you probably know that well over 95% of the workforce in the country and in the state is female. So we've talked about mothers going back to work. We've talked about the childcare workforce. It's time to talk about dads. Dads care about childcare too, even if they aren't as obviously involved. And we feel like it's time to celebrate that, to have these unlikely champions speak up, and to really just, create a movement of saying that, this is not just a women's issue. This is not just about mothers and caretakers who are female, and that we want to expand that to this voices that haven't been heard. I've been in this field close to 20 years. I was an elementary school teacher before that. And I don't believe there's ever been any kind of event at the Capitol that is specifically focused on dads and childcare. So Kids Forward, my organization, came up with this plan to have an event that's just a few days before Father's Day. So it's 2 weeks from tomorrow. It's called Dads Care for Childcare. And it's going to be up at the Capitol at 12 noon on Wednesday, June 11th. We're going to start out in the Rotunda and have kind of a rally, a short gathering to kind of get us fired up. And then we'll move over to the assembly parlor where we're planning to have a panel discussion. We've reached out to both Democratic and GOP legislators to who are dads to be able to come and speak to this issue, both from a personal level and from what they're hearing from their constituents and their role as a lawmaker and a decision maker about where our taxpayer funds are going to go, and are they going to go to support families and their needs.
Yeah, when I think about this, and folks, again, it is Dads Care for Child Care Wednesday, June 11th from 12 to 1 p.m. It starts in the Rotunda. You can find out more at kidsforward.org. It occurs to me, Dahi, that budgets are in so many ways an expression of our collective morals, our collective values, and that it is simply untrue for someone to stand up and say, I believe in the dignity of work and I support families, and in the next breath, vote to gut the system that helps bring childcare and at least make it somewhat accessible and somewhat affordable for Wisconsin families. Those are simply not compatible concepts.
I 100% agree. It's a moral document. And it's not only that, it's economically sensible. We have the money. It's not like we have almost a $4 billion budget. The ask for supporting the childcare for the next 2 years is $480 billion. I'm sorry. Whoops. $480 million.
Right.
Much smaller. So not even half a billion dollars out of that surplus. So, and I just want to give a quick shout out before we run out of time, which is that we have some great partners that are working with us on this. And I just want to give them a shout out. And there's more joining as we speak. We have the Black Child Development Institute, the Main Street Alliance, the Milwaukee Succeeds, the Hmong Institute, One City Schools, and others. So just want to say this is a collaborative effort.
Collaborative effort. When I come back as an economist, I'm going to give you a little explainer on why wages for childcare workers are so freaking stinking stickily low, and that the solution to that problem isn't, well, just anybody who wants to volunteer to show up at a childcare center and take care of your kids. That is not the solution here. I'm going to discuss that and other things in the big, brutal bill and their impact specifically on Wisconsinites when we come back. Big thank you to you, Dahi Wolf, Senior Early Education Analyst at Kids Forward. Keep it locked. We'll be right back.
Thank you, Maggie.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home for Matt Nair on Air.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Wisconsin Republicans are proposing expanding early voting access. With more, here's Civic Media's Joanne Grulotz.
The Republican-sponsored bill would address inequalities between voting in urban and rural areas, providing a 20-hour minimum for in-person absentee voting without needing to make an appointment. The measure would also establish a funding mechanism to help municipalities meet minimum hour requirements. Proponents say adding more opportunity for early voting will help minimize congestion and possible errors on Election Day.
In La Crosse City Government, the Board of Public Works meets today to go over permits, including one for XL Energy to access the marsh area of La Crosse to work on transmission lines, as well as a measure to spend $20,000 to put up security fencing at well number 25. Tomorrow, the City Administrator Workgroup meets, as well as the Economic and Community Development Commission, which will consider a resolution with developers for affordable housing on the corner of Main Street and 10th Street North. A man convicted of homicide and over a dozen other felonies in Juneau County is sentenced to life in prison. 48-year-old Donald Dahlberg was convicted of 15 total charges after prosecutors said he shot and killed Floyd Burdick near Nisida in January of 2024. Burdick's body and car were both found burned. Dahlberg's life sentence comes without the possibility of parole, according to online court records. Those same online records show Dahlberg has begun the filing process to appeal both the conviction and the life sentence. Name, image, and likeness rules are now in effect for Wisconsin high school student-athletes with the publication of the WIAA Bulletin. The new rule means that student-athletes can have NIL agreements as long as they meet certain conditions. Students can't appear in school athletic uniforms, endorse adult-oriented categories such as gambling or alcohol, or be paid for athletic performance. The rules also greatly restrict who can contribute to NIL deals and specifically ban recruiting. You can review all of the changes to the WIAA's constitution at wiaawi.org.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Here's one of Pete's picks. If you're looking for a good police procedural, check out Line of Duty. Season 1 starts with a police sergeant who refuses to be part of a cover-up and joins an anti-corruption police task force. Just started watching it, but I am digging it due to good writing and really solid British acting, including actors Lenny James, Kelly MacDonald, Martin Compston, and Stephen Graham. The BBC show is available to stream on several different platforms, including Hulu, Prime, and Peacock. The Cannes Film Festival gets the best of the best films every year, so it's no surprise that many films have received serious buzz post-festival. According to the Daily Beast, the best film to come out of this year's event is the comedy-drama Sentimental Value. The film stars the great Stellan Skarsgård and Elle Fanning and is being called a story about family memories and the healing powers of art. Sentimental Value is directed by Norwegian filmmaker Joachim Trier, and it's one to keep an eye on. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight and tomorrow, cloudy sky, few showers around at times. Low tonight, low 50s. High tomorrow in the mid-60s. Dries out for the end of the week and the upcoming weekend as the temps climb. Heating up into the 70s Thursday, 80s for Friday and the weekend. Currently at 64 degrees.
Matt Nair on Air.
The Joint Finance Committee just had 4 meetings around the state of Wisconsin. The top 3 things of concern to people were education, health care, and child care. The Republicans stripped all of those things out of Governor Evers' budget. So I'm thinking about going next time just to make sure that they all put their phones down when I'm talking to them, because I have a feeling they're all playing Candy Crush because they're not paying attention to what people are saying.
Catch Matt Nair on Air at its new time, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Pete Schwabba. On the next Nightlight, I welcome back comedian singer Rob Perivonian and Milwaukee-based actor Rob Martin, and I talk about our favorite movie gangsters. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Chew! What a fantastic set of guests, making all of us a little smarter together here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Big, big thanks to Angela Lang of Block, Jeff Mandel, and John Frankie, who helped file a lawsuit to help bring more choices to Wisconsin voters. And last but certainly not least, big thanks to Dahi Wolf, the senior early education analyst at Kids Forward. Again, they've got that big event coming up, Dad's Care for Child Care, Wednesday, June 11th, starting at noon, right in the Capitol Rotunda in Madison. Be there or be square or circular, as it was, rotundas generally circular. Folks, welcome back. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I wanted to give you a little read about why salaries in childcare are so cruddy. And the reason is that childcare, if you view it as a profit-making business, is not particularly profitable. And that's because you have families that need childcare all up and down the income strata, which means that as prices increase, people simply can't afford it, so they will literally drop out of the workforce rather than pay for it. And so where demand can be sticky, there is kind of a price ceiling, because it's not like people have an unending amount of resource that they can simply reallocate from other essential needs into childcare. So we've heard from Republicans frequently that the solution to the child care problem is get rid of all those pesky regulations about who can provide child care. I don't know about you, but there might be some tweaks that can be made to the regulatory scheme around child care, but it ain't going to get anywhere near close to solving the problem. We need more child care providers, but people don't want to enter the business because it has very thin profit margins, if you can even squeak one out at all, because this isn't a profit-making designed business. It is a human necessity. And meanwhile, people don't have like a never-ending bucket of resources to continue to pay more and more and more and more and more for childcare. So the needs don't go away because prices go up. You get what I'm saying? It's not like, oh, well, I'll buy this artisanal loaf of bread for like an extraordinary price, or I'll buy Wonder Bread because it's a nickel, right? Like, that's not how childcare works. And in general, as childcare prices go up, it's not like there's the super cheap option. There is some price differentiation, but in general, it's crushingly expensive. So from an economics perspective, this is like the perfect storm of factors coming together to make it so very hard for working families, especially working families right on the edge. If you're making over $200,000 a year, total household income, $300,000, the higher up the income strata you go, the better off Republican Party policies are for you. It just is. But if you are barely making it by, barely making do. The biennial budget that's being considered in Wisconsin right now, after Republican cuts, MAGA regime cuts, when we look at the brutal bill that House Republicans just passed on the Hill, everything is going to get much, much harder for families that are just making it work. So it's completely intellectually inconsistent for Republicans to say, I support families. I want people to embrace the dignity of work, to bootstrap themselves out of their current economic condition. And by the way, I'll make everything that working families need to survive more expensive by every policy and every budget that we pass. Just doesn't work like that. Childcare is an extraordinary example that's going to have immediate results that will start to hit after the end of June. And tomorrow, I might go back into all the statistics about the distributional impacts of the brutal budget reconciliation bill. But suffice it to say, the poorest among us, their effective income is going to go down. Annual income will go down by about $1,000 a year. And the top 0.1%, their incomes will go up by $4.3 million a year. Let's just take those two extremes. Top 0.1%, their incomes under the Republican brutal bill go up $4.3 million a year, because the top 0.1%, they really need that extra $4.3 million. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's putting them right on the edge. Whereas the poorest among us are going to lose $1,000 a year. That doesn't make any sense. And so while it's true on a very nominal or surface level, when we look at what Wisconsin Republicans have been saying about their support for the brutal bill that will hurt working families, it will hurt our elders that are in nursing home care. Over 70% of those folks in Wisconsin rely on Medicaid. It's going to make it worse for everybody. Yes, there will be tax reductions. Yes, it will avoid a large tax increase. But the question should never be those simple surface level issues. Is it a tax increase or decrease? Because who cares at a certain level? And I don't mean that flippantly. I care who gets the tax increase, who gets the tax decrease. It should matter who. It shouldn't just be a question of increasing or decreasing taxes. It should matter what the combination of these policies are doing to Wisconsin families. And if you approach it from that standpoint, who wins, who loses, who benefits, who pays more? Republicans can't speak at that level because the MAGA regime in this brutal bill and the Wisconsin biennial budget are privileging the very, very few, the richest among us, and burdening the rest of us. So I do care about whether or not it's a tax increase or decrease. But my statement is I care who is paying more or less taxes and who ends up better or worse off as a result of the bill. Who definitely matters. And when we get down to that level, there's no argument that Republicans can rely on. They can't do the analysis at that level at all. They'll just say, oh, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, whose job it is literally to do these analyses, oh, they're just wrong. Or in the state, the nonpartisan Legislative Research Bureau, they're just wrong. That's just ignore that. Don't pay any attention to the man behind the curtains. So here are some brass tax realities about the brutalness of the MAGA regime's budget reconciliation bill. And I'm going to talk about it not as a budget reconciliation bill, but as the single largest transfer of wealth from the middle class to the top 1% that our country has seen in history. Yeah, it's a tax reduction. Yep, we're avoiding tax increases, but it is the single largest transfer of wealth from working people to the richest among us that our country has seen in history. Here are the facts as they relate to Wisconsin. You want to get in on this discussion, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, 1.3 Medicaid recipients in the state of Wisconsin, that's 1 in 5 Wisconsinites. 4 in 10 births rely on Medicaid in this state. 1 in 3 children rely on Medicaid. 1 in 3 Wisconsin residents with disability. 1 in 6 Medicare beneficiaries in the state of Wisconsin also receive Medicaid support. 4 in 7 Wisconsin nursing home residents rely on Medicaid. Nearly 85,000 Wisconsin residents will lose their health care coverage because of the cruelty of the MAGA regime. The state, us taxpayers here, are going to lose nearly $500 million in federal Medicaid dollars. 70%, and here's the kicker. They keep talking about work requirements for Medicaid, work requirements for Medicaid, work requirements for Medicaid. As soon as someone, a MAGA regime spokesperson, says that to you, here's the response. 70% of non-disabled adult Medicaid enrollees already work. Let's say that again, because these are the statistics that drive me absolutely bananas. 70% of Medicaid, non-disabled adult Medicaid recipients already work. Of all total Medicaid recipients, I'm talking nationwide, 45% of them are already working full-time. So this whole thing about work requirements, what it is red tape requirements to shove people off of Medicaid that legitimately qualify for it. That's what's going on. 855-752-4842. I'm going to go to the phones. Want to drop a couple more statistics for all of you. The Wisconsin Department of Human Services estimates that these new red tape requirements will cost taxpayers, the administration of the red tape itself is going to cost each and every one of you that pay taxes in Wisconsin $66 million a year additional. It's going to strip healthcare from 52,000 otherwise eligible Wisconsinites. It just gets worse. Okay, let's talk about emergency food assistance. Here's what's going to happen in Wisconsin because of the brutal MAGA regime's budget reconciliation bill. It's going to cost Wisconsin taxpayers $314 million more a year, and 90,000 people are at risk of losing emergency food assistance. What? Oh, and the gutting of the Affordable Care Act. Yes, yes, yes. That little piece that they threw in there. During the last open enrollment period, a record number of Wisconsinites enrolled via the ACA, over 300,000. All of that going to be put in jeopardy. Let's go to the phones, 855-752-4842. Ross from Crawford County. Welcome. What would you like to say, sir?
Hey, Maggie. Thanks for the show. Thanks for giving me a chance to talk. I think that the Republicans, I'm trying to understand how the Republicans get away with doing this. And I think they've learned something, and that lesson I think goes way back to Walker and probably before. And I think it's such that the people that, when I think of the roughly 40% of people who are not voting, when you have things like Medicare, Medicaid, and such, these people that are relying on Medicaid, these people that are needing extra help for childcare, may be the same people who aren't voting.
Ross from Crawford County, are the folks getting the benefits, the folks that aren't voting? We're going to pick back up with that question on the other side. Keep it locked. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, 855-752-4842. I'm Maggie Dawn.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Destination marketing organizations are working to ensure Wisconsin tourism is stronger than ever. Their work boosts Wisconsin's economy, supports jobs, and improves our residents' quality of life.
sponsored by Destinations Wisconsin.
Progressive knows if you have to choose between everyday life and your RV, RV wins.
What, are you going to take the RV to the lake or clean out your closet?
RV wins!
Putting the dishes away or taking the RV camping?
RV wins!
Cleaning the fridge or taking a trip to the beach?
RV wins!
You might want to clean the fridge real quick because, you know, mold.
We clean out the fridge, then take the RV out.
With Progressive, you can bundle your RV with your home or auto and save with a discount and spend more time enjoying those savings in your RV. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Not available in all states and situations.
I'm still going for it, even with higher stroke risk from atrial fibrillation and a regular heartbeat not caused by a heart valve problem. Over a three-year study, Eliquis apixaban tablets reduced stroke risk better than warfarin. And over 97% of Eliquis patients did not experience a stroke. A first stroke occurred in 2.9% of warfarin patients versus 2.3% of Eliquis patients.
Don't stop taking prescription Eliquis without asking your doctor. It may increase your stroke risk. Eliquis can cause serious and in rare cases fatal bleeding. Don't take Eliquis if you have an artificial heart valve, abnormal bleeding, or antiphospholipid syndrome. While taking, you may bruise more easily or take longer for bleeding to stop. A spinal injection while on Eliquis increases risk of blood clots, which may cause paralysis, the inability to move. Get medical help right away for unexpected bleeding, unusual bruising, or tingling, numbness, or muscle weakness. Medications such as aspirin products, NSAIDs, SSRIs, SNRIs, and blood thinners may increase bleeding risk. Tell your doctor about all planned medical or dental procedures. Learn more at Eliquis.com or call 1-855-ELIQUIS.
Matt Nair on air.
The Joint Finance Committee just had four meetings around the state of Wisconsin. The top three things of concern to people were education, health care, and child care. The Republicans stripped all of those things out of Governor Evers' budget. So I'm thinking about going next time just to make sure that they all put their phones down when I'm talking to them, because I have a feeling they're all playing Candy Crush because they're not paying attention to what people are saying.
Catch Matt Nair on air at its new time, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
Last week, I asked if if me swallowing like 100 mayflies on a walk breaks a fast, because I was doing intermittent fasting. 0.008 calories per fly.
You are breaking a fast, though.
Because probably.
It's not zero.
It's not zero calories.
So you did.
Well, that really sucks. I mean, don't get me wrong. They tasted good.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Small businesses are the heart of America. As the nation's largest nonprofit resource of expert business mentoring, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses. For free, find a mentor today at score.org.
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Just got a wee bit of feedback on the text line. One of our regular listeners saying, it sounds like the same topic frequently, Maggie. And my response to our dear texter, my friend Mark, hello, Mark, was, yeah, if it sounds like we're talking about the same stuff on repeat, it's because it is. It is different versions of the same problem over and over and over again. And let's be clear. I know that I talk about Donald Trump as a unique and especially threatening political actor. But Donald Trump is just the acute current expression of what has been GOP policy since Ronald Reagan. And that is less taxes for the rich, gutting programs that help the middle class, and letting the chips fall where they may. That has been the mainstay of all Republican economic policy since Ronald Reagan. He ran on it and won twice. Now, there have been little softenings of that from time to time from different Republicans, because of course they need to win elections. But the reality is that this has been the playbook. Donald Trump has metastasized it, accelerated it, and brought all of the garbage to the fore. But the reality is, this is Republicanism. Everything else is smokescreen, distraction, and window dressing so that no one in the middle class, working people, and by the way, I'm considering working people, like basically if you're not clearing in a household like less than 500K a year, you're working stiff. Hate to break it to you. They've got their hand in the middle class's pocket. It has been there since 1980. It ain't going anywhere. They distract people by saying, it's a tax cut. It might look like one, but it's not going to operate like one for regular people. Full stop. Now, our friend Ross from Crawford County asked me, is it possible that the folks that benefit from things like emergency food assistance, Medicare, Medicaid, maybe some of the people that stayed home? And the answer to that question is yes, of course, because participation in these programs is widespread. It's the majority of people in nursing homes. But how easy have Republicans made it for people in nursing homes to vote? I'll give you a hint. They haven't made it any easier. Why do you think Republicans over the last 40 years, 50 years even, have attacked the mechanisms that make it easier for working people to vote if you're working two jobs? Why are we voting on Tuesdays and not Saturdays? Why is it harder for students to vote? Why can't you use your student ID to vote? Why did they fight letting people gather ballots properly witnessed from nursing homes during COVID? Why do you think all of this is? I'm going to take a break and take a breath and welcome one of our good friends to the show, L.A. Tom. L.A. Tom, always great to see you on my caller list. How are you, sir? What you got to say?
Hey, Maggie, I'm great. First, we the people ultimately are the government. We must never forget that. And second, we must get money out of politics. One thing I think that needs to be said is there's a lot of people out there, for some reason, that are making $70,000, $80,000 that think they're so rich. And when you take the different indices in Wisconsin of $16,000 for childcare, $16,000 for healthcare, $16,000 for mortgage or rent, and $16,000 for taxes, I think we really need to, like when you were giving all the different stats, we really need to identify dollar amount wise what is considered middle class, because I consider it probably $70,000 to over $100,000, $150,000 maybe, because I think a lot of people out there think that, oh my gosh, I got a little money in my bank. I guess that means I'm rich. No, you're not. If we're cutting Medicaid and Medicare and all that stuff, I always say I am closer to the poorest person and the homeless person on the street making over $100,000 than I am to the billionaire. And I hope everyone really thinks about that and thinks about how close they would be to being on the street. And where they are in comparison to that person versus the billionaire, because you're not even close to the billionaire. Even if you're making $1 million, you're still not close to the billionaire. Thanks, Maggie.
Yeah, thanks so much, Tom. Everything Tom just said times two. Unless you got, I'm going to say, upwards of at least $5 million plus, if you're talking generational wealth, $30 million plus, it would take one job loss for a prolonged period of time to potentially bankrupt your family. If you got kids in childcare or private school, or you can't send them to your public, whatever it is, one prolonged job loss. And by that, I mean 6 months or more. That's all it would take. And unless you can look at your personal finances and be like, yeah, I'm fine 6 months or more with your major bread earner and your breadwinner in your family without a job, we're talking about you. Folks, we have two fabulous guests tomorrow because we got to keep digging into this. It might be repetitive, but this is where the action is. The robbery of the middle class, reverse Robin Hood. We've got Michael Negron, former special assistant to the President of the United States for Economic Policy. He's going to join me tomorrow at 5. At 4 o'clock, I got Bobby Kogan, Senior Director of Federal Budget Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund, talking about the cuts to emergency food assistance. We're going to keep going here, because bringing the information to every single one of you and talking about it together is how we make this better. Oh, yeah, and that voting thing. That's going to do it for me on this Tuesday edition. Go Brewers! I'll be at the game tonight. I hope to see you there. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together.
Soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse. And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. An ex-police chief imprisoned for rape and murder is still on the run after he fooled security at an Arkansas prison, allegedly posing as one of their own. Grant Hardin is known as the Devil of the Ozarks, says ABC's Melissa Adon.
In 2017, Hardin pleaded guilty to the shooting and killing of a man and was sentenced to 30 years. That victim's sister saying she doesn't think he'll be taken alive and he won't go peacefully. While in prison in 2018, Hardin's DNA linked to the 1997 rape of a teacher.
The Trump administration, in an emergency petition, is asking the Supreme Court to lift due process procedures imposed by a federal judge for immigrants slated for deportation to a third country other than their own. It's too heavy a burden, says a government lawyer. Major U.S. stock indexes closing hundreds of points higher. Analysts cite a positive consumer confidence report and President Trump delaying tariffs on European imports. This is ABC News.